This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, back in the saddle with you once again after a couple of weeks on the sidelines, but happy to be back with you. As always, you are listening to this show live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you're tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of the show. And, of course, you're doing that on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, today's guest is making his first Trainer Talk appearance, his Trainer Talk debut, if you will. And if he was a racehorse, you might say that he comes into the show in fine form. He's fresh off saddling his first graded stakes winner this past Saturday at Aqueduct. And it wasn't just your run-of-the-mill, everyday graded stakes. Oh, no. The race that this trainer won has been around since 1904, and its winners are some of the most legendary horses we've seen in our sport. Names like Carryback, Damascus, Key to the Mint, Believe It, Pleasant Colony, Pine Bluff, Gopher Gin, Thunder Gulch, and now Brooklyn Strong has added his name to that illustrious list, thanks to our special guest here on Trainer Talk this afternoon, trainer Danny Velasquez. Dan, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Yeah, excited to hear your story. Let me just ask you this question. As you're listening to me rattle off those names, what are some of the things that are going through your mind thinking about what you just accomplished?
Honestly, I just still get chills because it's almost like I don't know what happened. I'm still on cloud nine. I know it happened. People are telling me it happened. They're like, Danny, you won a graded stake. You won the Remsen. And I'm still like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
To win any graded stake is a tremendous accomplishment. But to win a race like the Remsen with all that history and all those great horses that have come through that race, I mean, Danny, you just have to kind of wake up every morning now and just pinch yourself and ask yourself if it's actually real.
Yeah, I definitely wake up and pinch myself. Obviously, there's a lot of hard work behind the scenes going in, and we had to basically pivot this whole summer and this whole year because of COVID. I had to get out of my comfort zone. I had to leave parks. I had to go to Delaware because I went from almost 25 to 27 horse string outfit to like 9 because of COVID. I ended up pulling everything out, going to Delaware, kind of getting my bearings there, and somehow my owner ended up buying Brooklyn Strong, and then I went to the Tipton sale and I bought Leo Band on the Prayer, and it's just the rest is history. It's been a whirlwind.
Yeah, 173 career wins to your credit since going out on your own. You had 41 last year, 27 so far this year. The last three years really have been spectacular for you. But
yeah,
has there been any greater moment than what happened watching Brooklyn Strong cross the line first last Saturday?
Obviously, of course, in October when he won the Sleepy Hollow, that was amazing too. And then I won my first stake race that weekend with Leoban, and, you know, that was like the highlight. And I'm like, wow, life can't get any better. And then we turn around and win this weekend. That was crazy in itself. And then not only win a graded stakes, and like you said, win a Remsen, such a race with so much prestige and so much since 1904, that's crazy. You know, it's just one of those things that you dream about.
Every time I read an article about you and I see a quote or I see an interview that you've done, you seem very confident. How confident were you coming into the Remsen with a horse like Brooklyn Strong?
I was extremely confident. And even as far as people were asking me about the sloppy track, I said, I don't have a worry about the sloppy track because normally, at least with early on, as I progress, and even I'm a young trainer, I'm 36, I'm going to be 37 in December 20th. But as I progress training and as I get more 2-year-olds into my program, I make sure that I work them over a sloppy track. Obviously, I don't work them over a horrible track. I don't want to hurt them, but I make sure that they involve themselves on a sloppy track, and I see them over the surface because eventually they're going to have to do it in the afternoon. And with Brooklyn, I put him over that surface twice. I think maybe even published one or two works over the surface, and he just flew on it. So I was very confident that he was going to take to the track, and I knew he was going to take to the distance because I made sure first time out we routed him, which I usually never route a horse ever first time out, and that's actually extremely hard to do, and he handled it, you know?
Yeah, handled it beautifully. He drew off. He won by three that day. After he won that debut race, and that was a maiden claiming race, by the way, at Delaware on September 12th, after he broke his maiden and did it so easily, is that when you started to think, okay, we might actually have something here?
Yeah, we ended up in that maiden 40 by accident. We were actually pivoting the whole time trying to do maiden special weight, maiden special weight. I think the timing was off because I think we were going to enter. I can't remember exactly. Either we did enter in the main special weight races at Delaware and they didn't go, or I think either we weren't ready. It was something off with the timing, so we're like, okay, let's go for 40. Discussed it with my partner, Mark Schwartz. Obviously, I said, listen, we paid $5,000 for this horse. I don't think anybody's going to claim it for 40. It'd be, it would, at the moment, it would have been a score, right, to get 40 for the horse in a claiming race, because who would have thought he would turn out to be so good? But yeah, we went ahead and entered him, and obviously he did so well, and we were so happy with him. And obviously the talent pool that he beat that day wasn't exactly the best, but at the same time he handled the mile like a professional, you know, and that's extremely hard to do with a first time starter.
Let's talk about that purchase for a minute. You mentioned $5,000, and there's people listening now going, wait a minute, they bought this horse for $5,000, and he just won the Grade Two Remsen. That's you know, rags to riches story at its very best. Tell me that story. How did you get him for $5,000?
Well, like I said, COVID had a lot to do with everything that happened to me. I hate to say this out loud, but I want to thank COVID, because I would have, my partner Mark went to the OBS sale without me. I always go with him every year, and he called me. He says, Danny, there's a Wicked Strong down here. He looks phenomenal. He's well put together, but I'm basically going to bid on him. I said, well, you know, if he's cheap or whatever, go ahead, bid. He calls me later. He goes, Danny, I got the horse for $5,000. I said, oh, my God, Mark, what did you do, right? Because normally you buy a horse for $5,000, you go, oh, my God. He sent me pictures, and he was real correct and real good looking. And all I said to him, I was like, well, all we can do now is just train him. You know, we have him. We got time to train him.
I read a quote from Mark talking about being in the auction ring and or the arena, and the bidding opening at 50 and going down to 5. You don't see that every day.
No, you really don't. Really don't. But like I said, I think physicality had a lot to do with it. I think he looked good. He's a good looking at the time, Colt Gelding now, but very good looking, well put together. But like I told you earlier, before we got cut off, I think he had a little bit of a shin bump, and I think that deterred a lot of the buyers, the serious buyers, for 50. You know, anybody, you know, 5, even 10 maybe, for a little shin and stuff. But most people want the perfect horse when they pay 50 and up, and I feel like that wasn't the case with him.
For people that don't know Mark Schwartz, tell me a little bit more about Mark and tell me how that relationship came about with the two of you.
He's a Brooklyn guy, hence the name Brooklyn Strong. Hooked up with my dad, Alfredo Velasquez, also a trainer. He was a trainer at Parks for a long time. He's at Gulfstream now, only with a little string. He's semi-retired. He still has horses at Parks, but semi-retired guy. And he was with Mark for a little while, and I think my dad was more like, hey, Mark, I'm more on my way out. I kind of just want to do my own thing, go with my son. You know, he's young, he's hungry, he'll do a good job, blah, blah, blah. And hooked me up with Mark. And, you know, Mark's not a rich guy or by no means, and he loves the horses, and he just wanted to get involved, kind of claim a few. And he got involved with a few babies early on with us, got a little lucky, just, you know, little babies that won some money. And, you know, the rest is history. He's a really good guy, and I think he's good for the sport because, you know, he'll do the interviews. He has a cool story, and, he's a nice guy. I'm really glad that this is happening to him, because it couldn't happen to a better guy.
Talking with trainer Danny Velasquez here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Fresh off that big win with Brooklyn Strong in the Grade 2 Remsen at Aqueduct this past weekend, you heard him mention the fact that that was not his first stakes win. That came last October with Leoban on a Prayer, who won the Maid of the Mist Stakes and was quickly followed by Brooklyn Strong winning the Sleepy Hollow. So within about 30 minutes of each other, he ends up winning his first two stakes races. And that day, back last October, Danny, had to be really special for you.
Yeah, that was a whirlwind day because, you know, I knock out both New York bred stakes for the boys and the girls back to back. And, you know, like, I remember just sitting in the car driving home going, what happened? Because, you know, it's crazy enough that you can win one with a boy, but then you win the other one with the girl. Like, that's crazy. And both, I mean, cheap purchases, because, you know, even though he was 5, she was only 15. Not saying that's nothing, but in the sport of horse racing, that's nothing.
Yeah, great value. She was a Fasic Tipton purchase, which is great because this show is sponsored by Fasic Tipton. Where'd she come from, the Mid-Atlantic sale?
Yeah, the Mid-Atlantic sale. I went up and drove up, and again, I went to see her at the barn. I thought she was beautiful, and again, the Leoban first-time sire, so I'm watching her. I'm like, man, she's beautiful. I remember looking at the work. I love the way she stretched out, and I remember I was like, man, I'll bid on her if she goes for the right price, and I thought she was going to go, my personal opinion, I thought she was going to go for 30, 40, 50, and when I saw the ticker just go 10, 12, 5, 13, and then, I was bidding up to 15, and it stopped. I'm going, okay, when is everybody going to come in here? And nope, it just stopped there. And I was like, oh, okay. Obviously, when you do that, you just think, okay, I just bought myself a baby, and that's that. But the rest is history with her, too. She turned out to be really nice. And the bloodline's extremely hot right now. And I know they moved the sire to Kentucky. I'm a little upset about that. But pretty cool.
You know, it's interesting. You listen to you talk and talk about the success that you and your owners have had at the sales recently, anyways, picking out these horses and then turning them into really top-class racehorses. When you go to a sale, Danny, you're sitting there, you're looking at horses in the barns, whatever it might be. What's your philosophy? What are some of the things that you're looking for that a horse has to possess if you're going to raise your hand?
I know this sounds crazy, and it's an old wise tale, but my dad, a long time ago, obviously physicality, you know, I like horses that are a little taller, long neck, never with the neck up high, because, you know, you want a horse's head to kind of come down low when you watch the works. You know, you don't want a horse that holds its head up high, because you don't want to lose that head bob at the end ever in a race. But in the old wives' tale, my dad always told me, Danny, you stick your fist underneath their throat to check, and that's their airway. And if your fist sits there, they have a good airway. Now, obviously, that's without scoping and that, but that's just something he told me to do. And every time I go look over a horse, I put my fist under their throat. And if my fist fits, I assume that they have a good throat. Obviously, we scope and, you know, we get a better read like that. But it's just something that I do to every horse. And all my owners and clients that hang out with me during the sale see me do it to every horse that we look at.
Wow.
It's silly. But, you know, both these horses, my fist fit through them and then some.
Wow, I've never heard that before. That's really interesting.
Exactly. It's a little crazy, but, you know, this game's crazy anyway, so.
Well, and your dad, Alfredo, goes by Freddy, certainly no stranger to being around good horses and winning a lot of races. He's trained more than 1,100 winners in his career. Go back to the beginning here. Talk to me a little bit more about your dad, and then we'll even talk about your upbringing a little bit.
Yeah, obviously I was brought up in this sport my whole life. He's been a trainer my whole life. He's stayed local at parks his whole career. He's got 1,000 wins. But, you know, I was laughing with him the other day because it took him 30 years to win a Greatest Stake. it took me the time or whatever. And I'm still young. But, he taught me pretty much everything that he knows. And then, obviously, you got to pick up things on your own as you go and progress and evolve in the sport. But, I rode races for 5 years professionally. I won the Bug of the Year here at Parks and won 200 and some odd races as a jockey. So I really also take that experience as a former jockey into the game, because, like, I watch races a little different than people that just never ridden before. I can kind of get an idea where my horse can be. I can kind of get an idea, like, the feel of the race without having to be in it. I can kind of see when a jockey's in trouble before normal people see when it's trouble. And I really know when something happens and you don't win because of a trip and everything. I get upset, but I brush it off because I know that the split-second decisions that these jockeys have to make, it's extremely hard, and it's easy to watch it on TV, but we all know that, you know, you can't play quarterback. It's just one of those things that you watch it, you go, oh, no, watch, the hole looks so big, but you, I know better. I know that that hole might not be big to the jockey. So I take that all into account, and, you know, I feel like that gives me a big advantage. I used to gallop on my horses, too, but once I realized I could pay people, that was the best thing.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about the jockeys and the running of the race and how you approach it and handle that philosophically, yeah. Anyway, being a former rider. Because right. I was going to ask you that question. Are you, as a former rider, are you harder on those guys that you give a leg up to? Or maybe a little bit more understanding?
I'm easier on them because I understand the play. I understand, you know, if something, a miss happens, if your timing wasn't right that day, I understand if you have to check a horse and you didn't get that spot. I can understand if you had a bad break and the horse jumps and lunges. I understand all this. I get it. I've been there. I've done it. So, you know, when I see it happen, you know, obviously watching it happen, it upsets anybody. Obviously, oh, you don't want that to happen because you work real hard. But at the end of the day, I dust it off and I don't ever go nuts on the jockey and go, what happened? You know, because I get it. Obviously, you expect your jockey to learn from a mistake and not do it again, but sometimes races pan out where you think it's going to go one way and it goes another way, you know. And I'm very aware of that. And I think in that aspect, I'm easier on the jockeys. I'm easy to ride for. Any jockey that's ever ridden for me goes, oh, Danny's great. I don't give instructions either. I tell him good luck. I expect my jockey to be prepared. I tell him about the horse. Hey, this horse has speed. If you think you can get the lead, fine. It's up to you. You're the jock. Hey, this horse, you know, he doesn't like too much dirt in his face, you know, or whatever. But I don't give him instructions. I expect my jockey to know what to do. That's what they're getting paid 10%.
How come you're not riding races anymore?
Honestly, the weight is extremely hard. I got to give a lot of credit to a lot of these guys that sacrifice their body to really do it every day. And it got to the point where I was 17 and it was easy, but as I got older and turned 21, I remember getting broader and getting heavier and just really struggling. And I remember just waking up one day working a horse. I think I was like on 5, 6, 7 horses that day. I can't remember exactly, but I didn't know I was going to quit that day, but I remember just working a horse. It was dead of winter. It was cold. I was miserable, and I said, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. My body was just not happy with me. And I just stopped. And I remember telling my dad, and he goes, Danny, you could do other things. You could be an agent. You could be a trainer. You could sell babies in this business, or you can go to school. You're still young. And I'm like, I'll still work with the horses. And I just started, basically shadowing my dad, and I kind of became his foreman. Because as I realized, I didn't know anything about horses as a jockey. I was like, wow, I know nothing about this game. I just know how to ride them. I was really shocked. I thought I knew a lot, and I didn't know anything. Wow, I got a lot to learn. And I just remember just shadowing my dad. And then got my trainer's license under him. And then the rest is history. I broke away from him in 2016. And that's that. I've just been working and plugging away and just grinding every day, hoping to get these nice horses and eventually get the nice clientele to buy better horses and get some name recognition. And I'm hoping that this will help.
Did you ever think about doing anything other than being involved in horse racing?
My family's so deep rooted in horse racing that I really never thought anything else. I kind of, you know, I went and got a real estate license and I plugged away at that a little bit. But at the end of the day, the action is not there. This brings a euphoria that no other business, at least for me, brings. You know, the excitement, the ups and downs, certain, it's a roller coaster, absolutely, and it's a uncertain game, but at the end of the day, I kind of like that. I enjoy the unknown. I enjoy waking up every day. It's never the same. It could be a great day or it could be a horrible day, but it's just one of those things that you just keep plugging away, keep plugging away, keep plugging away. It's an amazing game. It really is.
You talked about, I saw an interview with you that was done by the folks at Parks on their Let's Go Racing feed, and it was back in 2018. Right. And one thing you talked about was enjoying the good times, but being able to roll with the punches when things aren't going so well. Right. How do you do that? What's that mean?
Right. I've been around this so long that I've seen people come and go. I've seen leading jockeys be leading riders, and then all of a sudden they can't find mounts. I've seen trainers be leading trainers and do really well, and then all of a sudden fall off the face of the earth. And I've seen guys, do really well, and then all of a sudden, the stable falls apart. And I kind of see the angle of them quitting and kind of just giving up. And I always told myself, I'm not going to be that guy. I know this business turns. You just have to keep working. You know, when you have a bad spell, you just got to keep grinding, keep coming in, keep doing what you know what to do, and then it will turn around. And it always has, at least for me, even as of now. Like, even when COVID happened and I lost almost everything, I was like, oh, my God. But in my head, I'm like, okay, I just got to pivot. And, this game, I just got to keep working and do what I know what to do and just keep plugging away. And basically, the game will reward you as long as you just keep grinding,
Yeah, and he has grinded, and he has grinded very well for many, many years now, and he's rewarded with his first graded stakes victory this past weekend. He's trainer Danny Velasquez, who is my special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Let's go back to your dad for just a minute, Danny, and tell me a little bit more about him. What is it that makes him such a good trainer?
He has like a lot of old school philosophy about being a horseman. He brings a lot of old little tricks that I feel that maybe some of the younger guys maybe didn't get that advantage. And I feel like that gives me a huge edge on a lot of these guys that are competing with me now. Even the older guys, I feel like I got a lot of knowledge just from watching him do some old school things that he learned under some guys that he worked in New York with. And basically I kind of put it in my bag of tricks, but I also bring new school philosophy into the game. I also evolve, I watch other people train and I kind of take a little bit from what I follow certain trainers. If I like how they do things, I take a little bit of that and I put it into my program. And I feel like that has been working for me. And that's what makes me almost dangerous if I get the right horses in my possession, because now I'm coming with all the old school, I'm coming with a lot of the new school, and then I'm coming for the throats.
We hear those terms a lot, old school, new school. Matter of fact, I remember when Shug McGahey was going down the road to the Kentucky Derby many years ago before he won it for the first time, and everybody said, oh, Shug's an old school guy. And it's probably true. He is an old school guy.
Yeah.
What's the difference? What does that mean, old school, new school? What are some of those philosophies that are
like
different
today? The older guys, they train a little differently. They look at the game a little differently. Obviously, they always talk about how help was so good back in the day and we can't get good help, which is all true. I mean, obviously, things aren't the same as they used to be. You get good grooms. I have a good team with me, without a doubt. But at the end of the day, my dad still goes, oh, and back in the 80s they did this, they did that, and now times have changed and you almost have to evolve with the sport, and you kind of just go, well, we can't do that anymore because the grooms don't even know what to do. Like the older grooms were more horse friendly. Now you get kids from the street that just they've never been around the horse, and then 4 months later they're a groom. So you kind of got to deal with that moving forward. You don't have guys that could tell you, hey, this horse's leg is blowing up. Some of the grooms don't really know. You have to teach them. So that's what I mean. Like the older generation knows that they had the better help, and they did things a lot differently. Now everything's more, the data's there. Everything's faster. There's more. There's the fire numbers, the Theragraph numbers. There's just so much data on a horse. And before you didn't have all that. Now you can literally look at videos of horses' previous conditions, and if you want to claim a horse, you can watch the horse's all his races. Guys didn't have that before. They literally had to do their homework, watch the horse on the rail or watch the horse in the afternoon, jot it down. Now I just go on my iPad, I watch all the videos, and I like this horse and claim him,
Yeah, you mentioned watching other trainers, too, and maybe taking things from them that you like and incorporating it into the way that you train horses. Who are some of the other trainers that you'll watch or have watched over the years that you've taken little bits and pieces from?
I'm a big fan of John Service because he's a Parks guy. I always admired him. I love the way he conducts himself. I think he's a good horseman. I think I was there during the whole Smarty Jones era, and I really took to the way he conducted himself as a professional. I think that he's good for the sport. He's the way he you know, figures out the babies. I think he does a great job. And I always tell him, I said, John, you're my idol. You're my idol. You know, but I like to watch a lot of trainers and see what adjustments they make with certain horses. I ask a lot of questions with guys that I admire. And I ask, hey, what do you think with this horse and that horse? And I usually just go from there. Obviously, I adjust it and make it my own, but I pick everybody's brain always. This is a sport that you're always going to learn, and you don't know everything, ever. I feel like if you ever think you know everything, you're in the wrong game.
Yeah, very well said. Danny Velasquez here, my special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Just about 3 or 4 minutes before we have to get to the commercial break at the bottom of the hour. Continue the visit in the second half of the show. Danny, I want to go back to one horse in particular that your dad had the privilege to train, and you were there with him in 2014 with multiple Grade 1 winner Private Zone. How cool was that ride?
Yeah, that was really cool. I remember when that horse arrived, and I went, oh, my God. And honestly, you look at Private Zone, he was a little stocky little horse. You would never think he was so quick. He had such a big turn of foot, and he was problematic. He was extremely hard to train. He had I remember when Renee Douglas, the partner that owned the Good Friend Stable, sent it to us, Private Zone had a problem galloping. He would gallop and plop, like in the middle of training. And when I remember, I think, when he was sent to us, we were told that, and we were like, oh, no. So I remember my dad going, don't worry, Danny, hop on. This is when I was still galloping and working for him. So he told me, Danny, don't worry, hop on the pony. We'll get another rider and hook on to him. So I used to get on the pony, hook on to him, and our pony at the time was really good, and he would go as fast as you needed him to. And I remember just whipping around the track with Private Zone, hauling butt. But Private Zone loved the pony, so he would never prop with the pony. And then in order to work him, I would really roll with him, and we would drop in real quick with the pony and drop him onto the fence, and he would take off.
He was an
really,
ultra talent.
It was a really cool experience, and that's what I'm saying. I took that into my playbook too, because now I know to do that if I ever have a problematic horse that doesn't want to train or move forward.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a great way to look at it. And yeah, Private Zone was a horse that was ultra-talented, ultra-fast. I mean, and he could carry that speed by winning the Cigar Mile. He could carry it a little bit, too.
Oh, yeah. When he won the Vosra on the Cigar Mile, 109 and change, and he just was dominant. And he was a really cool horse. But like I said, he wasn't easy to train. He came with his quirks, and that was the cool part about him. Once we figured him out and worked with him, he really came around.
Well, again, Private Zone trained by Danny's father. He goes by Freddie. His name is Alfredo. Goes by Freddie. Everybody refers to him as that. And your dad is still training and still going strong.
Yeah. He has his little stable in Gulfstream. I think he has a couple of horses there. I think he even was running one now. I didn't get to watch him. But he's still going strong. He's older now, obviously, and you know he's way past having a big stable and all that. But yeah, he's been a big part of my life and still is.
Yeah, talking with Danny Velasquez here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Going to get to a commercial break. We'll come back with the second half of the show, which will probably include a little more conversation about his Remsen winner, Brooklyn Strong. That's next on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.
Well, Fasic's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Fasic Tipton has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're going to have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Fasic Tipton is there every step of the way.
They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair, and they enjoy what they do. But when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And now they're coming for the quarter pole. Jose Ortiz took a peek back. He's got a 3-length lead on 10 for 10. It is Brooklyn Strong who's giving chase in second. 10 for 10 with the lead into the lane with 3/16 to the finish. But here is Brooklyn Strong up on the outside to challenge. 10 for 10 on the inside, and Brooklyn Strong on the outside, and the two of them are heads apart for the lead with a 16th to the finish. Brooklyn Strong, 10 for 10. Brooklyn Strong and 10 for 10 battled it out to the finish, and it is the New York Red, Brooklyn Strong, to win Aqueduct's Remsen Stakes. Narrowly over 10 for 10, a big gap back to Known Agenda in third.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Wednesday. Happy to have you along with me. That's the way that it sounded from track announcer John Embriel this past Saturday at Aqueduct, with Brooklyn Strong winning the Remsen. And that's a race, if you are just joining me, you heard me reference at the top of the show, that is a race that has been won by Carryback, Damascus, Believe It, Pleasant Colony, Pine Bluff, Gopher Gin, Thunder Gulch, and now Brooklyn Strong adds his name to that list, and that is one hell of a list to be part of. And his trainer, Danny Velasquez, is my special guest here on Trainer Talk today. I'm going to continue that visit right after I remind you that if you missed any portion of this show or any of our Trainer Talk shows, it's easy. Head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast at your leisure. You can also listen to the shows via Apple Podcasts as well if you want to tune in that way. So a couple of ways to listen if you missed any of it here tonight. Danny, we hear that call, and John Embriel with what was a very determined Brooklyn Strong in that Remsen Stakes this past Saturday. As you're listening again to the stretch call, what was going through your mind?
Top of the stretch, I was with Mark, and he goes, "We're going to get him." I said, "Mark, there's a lot of stretch going on, and I don't know if there's a video going around of us screaming," and I started going, "We're going to get him. We're 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 going to get him." And I'm like, "We're going to get him." This is real crazy. I'm very, when I watch a horse race, I don't know if you saw, there was a video on Twitter of me running around when I won the first two stakes at in October, of me going absolutely crazy on Belmont in the grandstand.
You know, that's what this game is all about, though. And, I think sometimes we get pigeonholed as a sport into being, you know, the sport of kings and a little hoity-toity, if you will. Not the case.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's not what this game
is all about.
I'm going to go nuts, especially because that's what it's all about.
I'm definitely not that guy. Let me ask you this question. If it's not your horse, and let's say you're just sitting there, and I don't know, you can tell me this, if you bet on races or not, but if you're just betting races with your friends and the horses are coming down the stretch, are you one of those guys that gets really into it as they're coming down the stretch?
Yeah. I mean, I don't gamble. I don't bet on horses.
Okay.
But I obviously have, and I used to. But, definitely, if I got some skin in the game, I'm going nuts. I'm screaming. I'm yelling at the TV. I'm banging the program. I'm banging my fist on whatever's close. I push people over. I'm a mess.
So you won't even bet on a horse like Brooklyn Strong? You didn't have any money on him the other day?
No, I don't. You know, I got. And the way I look at it is, I got so much skin in the game already. I don't need to bet anymore.
That's true. Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, I always feel like I'm going to jinx my horse anyway, so I just don't bet at all.
How about the rest of your immediate family? I know you have your wife Hillary, your three kids. Are they passionate about the sport like you are?
No. My wife is not like a horse person. She just holds down the fort really well. She's great. But she's not a horse person at all. She understands the sport. She follows me. Obviously, she watches races. But no. And in an odd way, it kind of balances me out because I come home and I don't have to talk horse with her. You know.
Yeah, that's got to be nice. I know that that's our life and our passion. It's what we love. But sometimes it is good to be able to come home and just talk about something else.
Yeah. You know, we talk about everything else. We don't have to talk horse with her. And, you know, she takes care of the kids and all that stuff. And it is nice. It's refreshing sometimes. I could just come home and just want to not talk about horse racing. And that's good with her because she doesn't want to talk about it either. So we're good like that.
How old are the kids?
You know? My daughter's 7, and I have twin boys that are 4.
Are they going to be horse trainers?
I don't know. I would like them to just be entrepreneurs and be good people. I always tell, even I tell my wife, I tell all the people, I was like, this game is so hard, and it's so sacrificing. Like, I went to Delaware. I live in Pennsylvania. I live in a little town, Bensalem, next to Parks, and I'm finally shipping my horses back tomorrow from Delaware. And this whole summer has been extremely hard on my wife and I and kids because I've been away all summer. Every day I wake up 3 a.m., 3:30, drive to Delaware, spend all day there, get home at 7 at night after battling traffic and hours of 95. And it's been, you know, it wears on you. It really does. And it's not an easy business to be in. There's a lot of sacrifice on both ends, you know, my personal life, and my wife has to sacrifice herself too because she has to be home. And it's one of those businesses that really wears on you, especially when you're all in. When you're all in and you're really pushing to succeed, it takes your soul almost. And I'm aware of that. And I've come to the point where if I told my wife this, and we all understand, we're all on the same page. If we want this so bad, it's going to take a lot of sacrifice because this is one of those things that you can't 50% it, you can't 60% it, you can't 90% it. You got 110% to be successful.
Yeah, very wise words from Danny Velasco as my special guest on Trainer Talk. You say if you want it and you want it that bad, you have to sacrifice. And we could say that about a lot of different professions or goals or whatever it might be. What is it that Danny Velasquez wants so badly?
Honestly, I want to be at the top of the sport. I really want my name to be engraved with names like Todd Fletcher, Alan Jerkins, Bob Baffert, you know, Brad Cox, you know, guys like that. I want my name to ring like their names, you know, like good trainers, John Service. And that's just going to take a lot of work and dedication. It doesn't come easy and it doesn't come overnight. And nobody's going to just hand it to me. I know I have to work and prove myself over and over again. And it's funny because you're going to think I'm crazy. I'm one of those people that, like, okay, I won my first two steak races in October. Fine. The next day I'm like, whatever, it's over. Like, I still pinch myself and I enjoy it, absolutely. Won the greatest stakes, all that. I don't have one picture in my house with horses, nothing. I'm a very, how can I say this? I'm one of those people that are like, okay, it happened already, it's over. Like, on to the next. Like, we have to keep going. Like, I don't dwell on a picture. I don't care about trophies. I'm very weird like that. I got the trophies from the other day, and they're going to just sit in the garage. Like, I'll never put them up. I'm very weird like that. I don't care about things like that. I just care about doing a good job, proving myself, getting my stats up, and that's where I thrive on. Like, I look at my stats more than anything. I want to be a 20% trainer. I want to keep my stats nice. That's what I look at. That's the picture I want. I care about winning, obviously. That sounds crazy, but I don't care about the win picture. I don't care about the trophy. It, none of that means anything. The moment means everything. I love it. I go out to dinner. I cherish it. I will always have it in my brain, and I still got to get pinched, but I'm very weird when it comes to stuff like that. I don't that stuff doesn't impress me. I don't know. Call me crazy or whatever.
It's a lot like a professional football coach or a college football coach, for example, even a basketball coach, where you'll hear them talk about the fact that, okay, you won this game. It was a big win. Enjoy it tonight, but tomorrow we're right back focused on the next goal and the next level
exactly
that we have to get to.
Like a Belichick, like, it's over. It happened. Enjoy. Drink the champagne today. Take a few pictures, whatever, and it's over. It's over. What's next? We have to prove ourselves next. We have to keep it healthy. We have to, you know, this game is one of those games where, what can you do for me now? You know, okay, you won those races. That was last week. You know, you go on a dry spell, they forget about you real quick. So I'm very aware of that. I've been around enough to know that. And, you know, nobody cares what you did yesterday. You know, oh, that was cool, you won the Remsen, but can you now turn around and win the Withers? You know, like, it's like one of those, or win the Gotham, or go win the Florida Derby. That's now my focus.
What will be the path for Brooklyn Strong?
I've been given a generic answer, just saying, hey, you just want to stay healthy and we'll see. But I think the path would be possibly the Gotham. I've been in talks with my dad, maybe the Florida Derby. You know, again, we don't know. He hasn't been back to the track since he ran. I'm going to ship him back to Parks tomorrow. And then, you know, I got to talk to Mark and kind of figure out what we're going to do.
What are some of the things, Danny, outside of the hard work and the sacrifice that you've already talked about, what are some of the things that you need to keep in mind if you're going to get to the level of a Todd Pletcher, of Shug McGahey, of a Bob Baffert. You're going to get to that level. What are some of the other things you have to keep in mind and you have to be focused on?
I have to keep in mind that I don't ever want to get comfortable, because I feel like once you feel like you've got this game pinned, it can turn on you quickly. And I find myself sometimes going, oh, okay, I got it. And then, like, I'll go through a dry spell. Funny, I was just talking to my assistant because we won both those stakes in October, and then literally in November I didn't win a race. Like, literally. And you know, we didn't have much shooters, and I lost a bunch of horses to the claims, but that just shows you how this game is so crazy. Like, it doesn't care that you won two stake races, you know? Nothing.
Yeah.
And that just, it's humble pie right away. It's humble pie. So you got to keep your nose to the grind, and you just can't get comfortable, because as soon as you get comfortable, the game will turn around and slap you in the face and tell you, hey, buddy, wake up. You're not that good.
Well, people listening are going to find out quickly that you have an interesting perspective on this profession and on the sport of thoroughbred racing, and you are very goal-oriented, very driven. Going back to that video interview that I saw in 2018 with Let's Go Racing, when they sat down with you at Parks, you had a quote in there that I immediately wrote down because I thought it was very, very interesting. I haven't heard many trainers say this out loud, but you said, "Horses are more than just horses. They're feeding tons of families and supporting the whole Pennsylvania agriculture." What a way to look at it. And it took me back, and I had to stop and say, you know what? He's right.
Yeah. One horse is more than just a horse. One horse comes connected with the trainer, with the jockey, with the exercise rider, with the groom, with the hot walker, with the trailer, with the feed man, the vet, you know, so on and so forth. So it's not just one horse. It's a whole, one horse is a walking billboard of business. You know, it's more than that. It's a lifestyle. And I feel like if you don't respect the horse, they won't respect you. And if you don't love this game, the game won't love you back. So I definitely live by that. And I always try to make sure that I do the best thing for the horse if he's in my care up until the end. And I've been known to pick up horses that I've claimed back just to retire them. I do that a lot. If a horse was, you know, in my care at one point, I see that I could pick him up for $2,000 and retire him, I do that because I feel like that reciprocate back to me in some weird way. The stars will align and the game will pay me back. And that might be a crazy way to look at it, but I've been doing that for a long time now, and it's been working, and I will never turn my back on any of the horses that are in my care, or if I can do something for a horse that was in my care before and I can do something, I will. Obviously, unfortunately, you can't save everybody, and you know, just like you can't save the world, you can't save every horse, but you know, as long as I can do it, and God willing, I have the finances to do it, I will. You know, and anybody that knows me knows that.
You know, I know your story, Danny, is still being written, and the majority of that story still remains to be written. But when you think about what you've accomplished so far in what I would say is a relatively short period of time, what are some of the things you're most proud of?
I'm just more proud, I guess, I'm just proud that we're doing it right, that we're doing everything the right way. We try to just do a good job, and we're not out there being silly, doing anything to hurt the sport, and we're just trying to keep the game clean. We do the right thing by the horse, and, you know, I'm always very aware of I'm not trying to ever get positives or anything like that. Obviously, you know, things can happen, but, you know, I'm always trying to make sure we do everything right, and that's always worries me the most, and reputation is everything, and I feel like if I keep a good reputation, a clean reputation, and moving forward, that will come back tenfold for me, and eventually I could just keep going, trucking along, getting the right clients, getting the right horses. And at the end of the day, let's face it, it's horse. It's all stock. You get the right stock, you get the right horses, they make my job a lot easier. You know, high-caliber horses come into play, and all of a sudden you can get to those big races a little quicker because now you got the high caliber animals. Obviously that doesn't work out every time, but it gives you an edge if you get those high powered horses into your stable. So, you know, obviously that's the goal. That's where I want to be. I feel like if you give me a smoking gun, I'm as dangerous as anybody.
What's the ideal number of horses that you could see yourself training when you get to where you want to get to?
Honestly, I say this all the time. I'm a guy that is a hands-on trainer, and I admire the super trainers. These guys have 200 head of horses. Kudos to them. I don't want to be that guy. I go crazy with 20 head of horses. I can't imagine having 200. I feel like a good number for me would be 40, and that's it, where I could stay hands-on. I could keep it all under one roof, and I feel it would be quality over quantity. That's eventually where I want to be. And I definitely don't want to be a guy that has 200 horses and just, you know, running. I mean, like I said, I give 1,000% credit to guys like Asmussen. And even a guy here locally named Jamie Ness, he's got 200 head of horses. And I always ask him, how do you do it? This is madness. It's madness, you know. But I don't want to be that guy. It's not in my nature. I think I would keep a 30, 40 horse stable. And that's where I kind of been at already for the last 3 years, kind of keeping it at 20. I maxed out at 30 in 2019, and that's a good number for me. I'm okay with that. I feel like I can keep my eye on the prize there. I can be hands on. I can see everything. I can literally watch every horse. I'm not just relying on an assistant or somebody telling me your horse went good. I'm there, you know.
He's trainer Danny Velasquez here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Danny, I love asking trainers this next question. You know, when I watch golf, for example, there will be a golfer that talks about the greatest shot that he ever hit. A baseball player will talk about the greatest swing that he ever made. As a trainer, what's the greatest training job that you have done to date?
Honestly, at the end of 2018? Yeah, we're in 2020. Or maybe it might have been the end of 2019 or 18. I can't recall. It might have been to end of 2019. In December, right before the end of the year, I won 3 races in one day. But that wasn't, like, the cool part about that. Every single one of those horses was off the claim. All of them. I claimed them. He won. I claimed them. He won. All on the same day. I claimed all from different trainers and all at different levels. And every single one of those horses turned around and won. I thought that was the coolest because at the end of the day, you know, I'm as much as I won with the two-year-olds and I won a progressive two-year-olds, I'm a claiming trainer as well, and I love claiming horses and I love getting them to feel good and to perform better than their previous form. And I think that's like the coolest part about what I do. And that day when I knocked out 3 wins, not even so much the 3 wins, it was off the claim. That was awesome. Like that's awesome. Like, I thought that was the coolest thing. Even, you know, winning those stakes was awesome, but that was, like, the coolest thing to me because I was like, wow. Like, I took 3 of these horses, and they all won off the claim.
Yeah, pretty spectacular to be able to go 3 for 3 like that.
Yeah, I thought
how
that
do you
was
know,
really cool.
How do you know that it's a horse that you can move up? How do you know that's the right horse to claim?
You know, honestly, it's hit or miss, but you know, I look at a lot of the numbers, and I see if a horse at one point hit a certain number and might be a little stagnant with a certain trainer, I always look like, okay, the horse ran a certain number maybe 5 starts ago, and then the horse is a little stagnant. I always think, can I get it back to that high number at one point? And a lot of times I can get the horse back to that number. I mean, if I get him back to that number, I got a winner. Like, that's how I look at it. Okay, the horse ran, let's just say the horse ran, was running at one time, 80 buyers, and now he's only running 72, 73s, but you know deep down inside that horse got an 80 buyer in him somewhere, like, you know, 10 starts ago, right? Let's just say that.
Yeah.
That's where I claim the horse and go. Unless he's physically messed up where I can't fix anything on him, that's different. But if I know I can get that, a lot of times I bring him back to that number a month later, boom, and they win. Because I know that the horse had that number in him at one point. You just gotta figure him out and get it out of him.
There are people listening that hear you talk about trying to fix a horse that you claim. And I've always said, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not a trainer, I've always said it's a lot like an athlete that, you know, is maybe a little sore or coming off of an injury, and you have to rehab them and you have to bring them back to a certain level. Is it similar with horses? Am I right in looking at it that way?
Yeah, similar with horses. You know, you take the horse and you evaluate them. You kind of want to see them where – I always look at the best part of their form at one point or another, and most horses, unless they're completely too far gone to fix, you could bring them back to that you know. Not all of them, obviously, you know, they have bumps and bruises that you just can't get through and you can't work through. But a lot of times when you can work through the bumps and bruises by, you know, doing certain things with the vet or, you know, certain medications and a good diet, you know, good supplements. And I'm a big believer in good vitamins and keeping the horse healthy and keeping their blood up and attacking the stomach and doing their mouth and making sure that they're shod properly and making sure that their coat looks great. If I could do all that and the horse reciprocates that into energy and explodes when I send them out there, of course he's going to come back to that number and show his previous talent. Now, does that happen all the time? Of course not. But I always, that's how I get a range of how or what I'm going to do with the horse as soon as I get him in my care. A lot of people send me really and the people that work for me go, Danny, these people, a lot of these trainers or owners send you these project horses because I'm infamous for picking up a horse that's falling apart and just fixing them and you know, not getting them to become allowance horses, but at least getting them to make a little money for the owner and kind of getting them back to almost their previous form by just a little TLC, making a few adjustments with the equipment. Maybe the rider tells me, hey, Danny, let's take the blink. You know what I've been doing lately and with a lot of my claiming horses, a lot of these older horses have wearing blinkers. I've been pulling blinkers off all the older horses because I feel like they don't need them. They're older now. They're not babies. But a lot of times trainers keep these horses with the blinkers because they had the blinkers their whole life. The horse was two, the horse was three. Somebody put the blinkers on, they never took them off. Now the horse is eight, still with blinkers on. Sometimes it's as easy as taking the blinkers off and the horse sees everything and they run off the TV set.
Wow, that's incredible. So you almost have to be, in addition to looking at the physical side of it, you have to be somewhat of a horse whisperer and a horse psychiatrist, if you will, to be able to look into their mind and figure out what's going on.
Everybody in the barn laughed at me because before we send the horse out, they asked me, Danny, is this horse talking to you? And I go, yep, he's talking to me today. He's ready. And, you know, horses will perform to that. They show you that they're ready by feeling good in the stall. You see the shine in their eye and you see the little twinkle and you go, oh, wow, this horse wasn't like this 3 weeks ago. Oh, this horse wasn't like this 4 weeks ago when I got him. Now he has a little shine to him, a little pep to his step. He's ready, you know. And that's how I range when a horse is ready.
Just incredible. Danny Velasco is my special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Danny, inside the final furlong here, the final 5 minutes of the program, and I always like to spend this time talking to trainers about things that they like to do away from racing. So I know you don't get much time to be away from racing. You already talked about the sacrifices that you and your family have made and will continue to make. But what are some of the other interests and hobbies that you have?
I'm a big MMA guy. I've been doing Krav Maga for 9 years, 8 years. I didn't get to train this summer because of Delaware, but as soon as I get back this week, I'm going to be back in the full training with my Krav guys. I do mixed martial arts, Krav Maga, a little jiu-jitsu, hand-to-hand combat. I go to the shooting range. I'm a big gun enthusiast. I own guns. I love guns. I carry guns.
Fantastic.
That's
so
like,
you do have other things. You won't get much time to do those things, though, will you?
Right now, when I was in Delaware, I didn't get any time to do any of that. But I feel like once I'm back at parks, I can do it because I'm 5 minutes from the racetrack. They're running 3 days a week. Obviously, I'll get pulled away for a couple of races with my babies and all that, but I'll have a little more time now to train. You know, I'm not going to train like the hardcore guys. I'll train 3-4 days a week at night, you know, energy, if I have the energy to. But, yeah, I've been doing that for a while, and that really helps my mindset because I can go in there stressed out about horse racing, and then you get punched in the face, and then you're not stressed out anymore.
Yeah, and we'll send a note to all those other trainers that you're trying to get to their level, the guys like Todd Pletcher's of the world. Watch out for this guy. Don't cross him the wrong way. Fantastic.
Yeah, no, everybody always laughs at me with that. They go, oh, yeah, stay away from me.
Well, it's great stuff, and it's a great diversion.
I love all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a tremendous diversion and a great way to step back and keep things in perspective and keep your mind clear, as you said, Danny Velasquez here on Trainer Talk. Yeah. So what's the future hold, Danny? What's next? Where do we go from here?
I don't know what the future holds. The future is a funny thing. I didn't even know I'd be here right now. After COVID happened, everything was so crazy that if you would have told me that I would have won the Remsen, I would have looked at you like you were crazy, and I'd be like, yeah, right. So the future holds what the future holds. I just want to have a healthy family, healthy barn, and I just want to keep working. And that's what the future will unravel in front of our eyes like everybody else.
Now, one of the bright young trainers in the game today and one of the talented young trainers in the sport today, Danny Velasquez, here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Danny, it has really been a lot of fun to hear your story and to hear you tell the stories about your dad and being around him, and now to see you having this kind of success is just fantastic. So congratulations, congrats on the big win in the Remsen. I know that you have bigger fish to fry up the road, so good luck with that quest, and thanks for being here, my friend. Just a delight to hear your story.
Hey, listen, everything's much appreciated, and you'll be hearing from me more and more. Don't worry about that.
We'll keep an eye out for sure. Danny Velasquez here on Trainer Talk.
Thank you.
Presented by Fasig Tipton. Yeah, fantastic stuff. You talk about a guy that is focused. You talk about a guy that is driven. I don't know. I'm trying to think of when I've had a trainer on this show that has sounded more intent and more driven and focused to get to where they want to get to. You know, you'll hear that from athletes quite often in the world of sports that, you know, look, I want to be the best. I want to be the next Michael Jordan. I want to be the next Tom Brady. I want to be this. I want to be that. And they set a plan. They work their tail off. They sacrifice. And hopefully they get to that point. I don't know when I've had a trainer come on this show or any other program that we do and talk in those terms about the profession of training racehorses. You know, at least not that openly. I'm sure every trainer is driven to be the best. You want to perfect your craft as much as you possibly can, no matter what it is that you do. If you're on radio, if you're producing behind the scenes, whatever it might be. You're training racehorses, you want to be the best trainer. But to have a trainer like Danny come out and say it and say, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to be. I'm going to work my tail off. I'm going to sacrifice. My family's going to sacrifice. You know what? I wouldn't bet against them. Not me. Put your money against them, not mine. Fantastic stuff. Danny Velasquez here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. My thanks to Danny. My thanks to the folks at Fasig Tipton for continuing to make this show possible. And my thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, back in our Lexington studios for pushing all the right buttons. Been a fun show. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.